This is Digital Podcast number 538, June 28, 2016. Today's theme is Chicago Takeout. I'm Derek Story. During my week in Chicago, I've learned a lot of things, talked with many people, and have taken many, many pictures. For those of you who joined me here, you know it was a rich, memorable experience. And for those who could not make it, I have a takeout order for you. And that's the focus of today's show. Chicago Takeout. So here I am, sitting in my room at the Travel Lodge on Wabash in downtown Chicago. Now, you'll hear the train rolling by every now and then. And I'm sure housekeeping will tap, tap, tap on my door at least once during the show. Before they reclaim the room for the next visitor to this great city, I want to share a few of my favorite moments from my week teaching at Out of Chicago, because I tell you, it was really something else. I know that most of you couldn't make it here, although, man, I can't believe how many people I talk to that are show listeners. So I'm going to give you some of the highlights, some of the themes, and some of the things that I observed. And we'll start out with the state of mirrorless. So we had Olympus here, we had Panasonic, Sony, and Fuji. They were all sponsors at some level, but what really jumped out at me was how many of the instructors and attendees were carrying mirrorless cameras. I mean, it dominated the scene. Now, I know this was an urban photography conference, so okay, that makes sense. If this was a landscape photography conference in the middle of somewhere beautiful, Yellowstone or something like that, I doubt we would see nearly as many mirrorless cameras. And that kind of speaks to the right tool for the right job. You know, when you're on the go, when you're traveling, when you're doing street photography, when you don't want to carry a whole lot of stuff around all day on these very long days that we all have, mirrorless makes sense. And the camps were divided a couple different ways. There were a number of folks who said, you know what, I'm just doing this. This is it. I'm doing mirrorless. I sold all my DSLR gear. I got a good price for the lenses and the bodies, and I am happy as can be with my Fuji or my Sony, my Olympus or my Panasonic mirrorless camera. And indeed, they were smiling when they told me this. I believe them. I believe that they were happy. And then there was the other group. And, you know, I think this division was really pretty much down the middle. There's the other group where they've added a mirrorless camera and a few lenses to their existing kit. And the way that that looked to me, it was a little bit like a rebalancing. You know, like when we rebalance our stock portfolio, when we rebalance our camera gear, I think it's a little bit of like, well, I'm going to get rid of some of my DSLR stuff that I wasn't using a lot. In fact, this is a good excuse to do that. I'm going to add a mirrorless body and a couple lenses and create a new kit that allows me to choose DSLR when I need that functionality and choose a mirrorless body when I want that. And I saw a lot of that here at the show. And in fact, when we had our discussion on Sunday morning, we had a panel discussion that was packed, by the way, called The State of Mirrorless. That was the theme, or one of the themes, of the show. Now, Frederick Van Johnson led that discussion, and he got into things such as, well, sensor size and, you know, what type of mirrorless. Because, I mean, mirrorless can go all over the chart. If you get a full-frame Sony mirrorless camera and you get the professional lenses, your kit really isn't that much smaller than your Canon or Nikon bag of tricks there. However, if you go, let's say, Micro Four Thirds, with a smaller sensor, you get much smaller lenses as a result, because smaller sensors mean you can have smaller optics. And is that trade-off worth it? And I think for a lot of folks, and I probably fall into this camp too, that I can go with the smaller sensor, Micro Four Thirds sensor, because I do have a DSLR, I have my Canon 5D Mark II, and I do have some excellent lenses for it. Now, I sold a lot of those lenses, but I still have the ones that are my bread and butter lenses. So having that full frame sensor in a DSLR allows me to have a Micro Four Thirds size sensor and really take advantage of what mirrorless has to offer, which is lighter bodies, smaller lenses, and just a more compact kit. So it was really interesting to listen to people talk about how they approached this rebalancing of their kit, whether they went all one way and sold everything, or they're trying to do some sort of, you know, hybrid model where they keep certain elements of their DSLR kit but add mirrorless to it. Regardless of which approach they were taking, mirrorless is alive and well, and I have to tell you, it's not going anywhere but up. This next thing was interesting to me. As I've mentioned throughout the upcoming weeks that were, you know, leading up to the conference, Red River Paper was sponsoring me and sent me to the show. So I really wanted to write some classroom sessions that got people excited about printing. And so I wrote this session, and I had two engagements. I had Saturday presentation, a Sunday presentation of this called Beyond the Pixel, Your Photography as Art. Now, I felt like I had written a pretty good presentation, and I thought that people who attended would find it very interesting. What surprised me was, you know, they put me in double classrooms. So there were some single classrooms, and then there were double classrooms, you know, where they take out the partition and, you know, they just have rows that hold over 100 people. First of all, that surprised me that I was in double classrooms both the time. And then I checked on attendance, and a couple of weeks before the conference, we had 90 some odd signed up for Saturday and 60 some odd signed up for Sunday. When we actually got to the presentations themselves, both days the classrooms were packed. They were packed. I had over 100 people both days. Now, I love this because the subject was printing, and as you know, this is something that is near and dear to my heart. So I loved the interest in the class, Beyond the Pixel, Your Photography as Art. And what I did in the class was, and I want to bring some of this back to you right now if you weren't able to attend, is that I started the story in 1988. In 1988, I had been shooting a lot. I was a working photographer, actually. I was a journalist at the time, working for a newspaper. And I felt like that my photography was really in a rut. I mean, I felt like I was kind of just shooting the same way, not really pushing the creative envelope, publishing good pictures for, you know, my publisher, but not really doing anything exceptional. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go for 4 weekends to the LA County Art Museum. I lived in Southern California at the time. I'm going to hang out there for 4 weekends in a row, and I am going to do a photo essay on people hanging out at the LA County Art Museum. And, you know, this forced me to do a lot of things. One is to get model releases for subjects, which I never had to do with my newspaper work. And, you know, so I had to interact with them and do all that. And that was getting me outside of my comfort zone for sure. And then really just sort of living there and seeing, you know, where the good shots are and what can I put together? What story can I tell here? And I thought the way that I could really up my game would be then to take those images, figure out which ones are the best ones, choose a dozen, and then make prints of them, the best prints that I could make from them in my darkroom, and mount them. And I figured by going all the way, going that whole route to where I actually had a print mounted and ready to hang, then that would also force me to have a level of attention that maybe I didn't have in my newspaper work. And the project was a success. It was a personal success for me because I felt like after I finished that project, I was a different photographer. I felt that conceiving something and challenging myself and then really producing something that was the best quality that I could produce made me better overall. And so I was telling the folks that were in the classroom that when I wanted to write, you know, this talk, I wanted to pull one of the pictures from that shoot. And so I go upstairs in the studio and I go to where I have my images archived, which is a series of banker's boxes with felt tip marker writing on the outside. But I found the shot that I was looking for in about 5 minutes. Literally, it took me 5 minutes to find a photograph, a really nice photograph that I wanted to find from 1988, over 25 years ago. It took me 5 minutes. And I was saying, okay, 25 years from now, how long will it take you to find a shot that you take here in Chicago during this conference? Will you be able to find it in 5 minutes? Will it be in some sort of format that you'll be able to read? Will it be on a piece of media that still works? You know, there are all these questions that are literally question marks, whereas if you make a print and you file it away, you will have that print 25 years from now, unless something very unfortunate happens. And, you know, then we, you know, if something that bad happens, then we're losing all sorts of stuff, right? So 25 years from now, you will still have this. So what I advocated was, is the idea, and I'm sure longtime listeners will remember this, what I call 6 prints a year. Just make 6 prints a year, the best quality prints that you can make. You know, you can send them out, you can do them with your own inkjet printer, however you want to do it. 6 prints a year of imagery that you think is some of your best work, and then preserve it. Now, at the end of 10 years, you will have 60 prints. You will have 60 prints of your best work in archival form that should last 100 years or more. Just after 10 years, you'll have 60. And if you do more than 6, you'll have more, okay? But just 6 prints a year. Now, imagine that if everything else that you had, all of the other media, all the other computers, the hard drives, everything, if it all went away and all you had left were these 60 prints, that's a show. That's enough to tell the story of you as a photographer. That's enough to capture the memories of people that were important to you and places that you saw. So it's something to think about, and that's what I asked folks to consider in this class. And then I talked about the barriers to printing and how to overcome them, how to keep your printing process simple, because now with the modern printers and the modern computers, you shouldn't have to calibrate your screen. I only calibrate a computer screen if I need to, if the print's not working right. You shouldn't have to calibrate your computer screen, and you should be able to use a printer management for the process and not have to use ICC profiles. And I asked people in the room who have experience printing, and the ones that stay up on things said that they were having a similar experience, that this easy workflow worked. And this falls into the category, and this was a theme that I talked about both in the Nimble Photographer workshops and in the printing class, which is, if you think you know something from 10 years ago, from 15 years ago, you may have to reevaluate it, because we are in a process of constantly having to reevaluate what we believe to be true, because what was true 10 or 15 years ago may or may not be true right now. And so, for example, how you print changes. If you haven't tried the new technology or taken advantage of it, you might not know that it's there and still believe that you have to do things the old way. So you have to constantly reevaluate what you believe to be true in photography in order to be as efficient and as effective as possible. And then we made fine art printing cards, and I showed them how to do it in Lightroom. Red River Paper has free templates that you can download that work in Lightroom. They're fantastic. And then I showed them how to do it in Photos for OS 10. And in fact, if you don't use Photos at all, you may want to use them for these greeting cards because it's fabulous. And for you, just for you, I posted an article on the Digital Story on how to do that. Yes, the instructions are there. Everything. And it is easy and it is fantastic. And within minutes, you will have your own fine art greeting card on archival paper that feels great, and that people will be thrilled to receive, and probably a lot of them will frame the shots. So that is the essence of what I taught in Beyond the Pixel, Your Photography as Art. And I tell you, it's a talk I'm going to do again. I mean, I'm going to think about the reactions that I got. I got a lot of reactions from people. We had a lot of conversations following the class. And I'm going to continue to refine that talk and do it again. Do it again. I think this is a great theme. And it's definitely one of the highlights for me of the show. Next, the Nimble Photographer Workshop. So this was the debut of the Nimble Photographer Workshop. I've been waiting for the right place. I wanted to do something different. I thought debuting it in Chicago just seemed perfect, and I'm really glad I did. And really what I'm testing here are two things. One is a one-day workshop instead of my normal two- or three-day workshops. And then two is a workshop that was, you know, lighter all the way around, including where we can do it and how much it costs and, you know, everything. Just make the whole thing more nimble. And I thought it went really well. Now, the essence of this workshop won't be a surprise to many of you, which is, you know, traveling lighter, being more efficient. And part of being more efficient is challenging the things that you believe to be true about photography, reevaluating those things, and then having a lighter workflow, and then being creative in how you solve problems. And so to share that knowledge, obviously I shared some of my tips. I had a number of tips, but we took turns throughout the day, and I'm gonna repeat this definitely in the Nimble Photographer Workshop, where people that were attending the workshop did a 5-minute demo on the clever things that they liked about their kit. They would show us what's in their bag. They're showing us what they used and how they were using it and sharing their knowledge with everyone else. So we did like 4 or 5 of those every day, and it was really great. I mean, I'm sure the class learned as much from what these people were demonstrating as they learned from me. And then, you know, we did shoots and we talked about technique, all that stuff. We went out and did a shoot outside. And then the way that we finished up is with a MacGyver session, which is a session. So I told people, when you're showing us what's in your bag, when you're doing this demo, save your favorite thing for the MacGyver session. And the MacGyver session is some clever little hack that you figured out and then really makes your life easier. And so, for instance, I gave everyone a carabiner, you know, a carabiner key ring, you know, that in the, just like what people use for rock climbing. Gave everyone one of those, and then I showed them how almost every bag, especially the light nimble bags, definitely the Streamline Nimble Photographer bag has this, they have a little loop in the back. They always have a little loop in the back. You can use that carabiner, put that in the loop on the back of your little bag, your shoulder bag, and then put the shoulder bag around to your backside, and then connect the carabiner to a belt loop, the back belt loop on your pants. By doing this, then you can get on a bike or you can take a hike or whatever, and as you move around, your shoulder bag won't swing around and throw you off balance. It will stay in the back. A very simple, very easy thing to do. You just use a carabiner, use that little loop on the back of the bag, and then you use your belt loop, and you can create a very light shoulder bag situation that also doesn't throw you off balance and stays out of the way too. It's not banging underneath your arm, driving you nuts. Everyone shared their stuff, their MacGyver things, and it was incredible. So the Nimble Photographer Workshop may have debuted in Chicago, but I tell you, I'm going to figure out where I can do it. I want to do it more often. I'm sure I'll do some in California. I'd like to figure out other places. If you have ideas about a location to participate in this workshop and you want to do it, you know, in Texas, in Florida, New York, Phoenix, wherever, write me, okay? Write me and we'll see if we can figure this out, because I love this workshop and I think folks would really enjoy it. It's one day and it's affordable. All right, what's next? You know what? Film is not dead. I know I've been championing film on the new site, theanalogstory.com. I hadn't planned on talking about it at all in Chicago. Now, I brought my film camera. I bought a Contax G1 with a couple lenses, a couple Zeiss lenses. And in fact, on the Analog Story right now, I talked about how I approached the shoot here, the film shoot here, that once I got here, I went over to Central Camera Company on Wabash, right down the street from me, really. I bought film here. That saved me from having to take it through TSA while I was flying. Did one roll of 100 for a bright daylight shoot that we did over at Wicker Park, and then one roll of Kodak 800 for a night shoot here in downtown Chicago. And then I brought a prepaid envelope for my photo lab back in San Francisco. And on my way out the door today, I'll put that film in a mailbox, and it will be shipped directly to the lab from here, and I won't have to take that film through TSA either way, because I bought it here and then I'm shipping it out from here. That was interesting. You know, I loved doing that part of it, but I hadn't really planned on talking about it. And I had all these people come up to me and talk to me about the analog story. And basically what they were telling me is that that site has inspired them to find their film camera, pull it out of the closet, dust it off, and then they're thinking about projects that they can do with it. Now, like me, they're not going to switch over to shooting film all the time. I know some artists will, but I'm not shooting film all the time. I need too quick of a turnaround. And so do a lot of other folks. And, you know, there's a certain expense involved with finding the film and processing it. But they are thinking about film projects that they can do. And film is definitely not dead, and these people were really quite excited about the prospect of using their film camera again and figuring out a project to do with it and sending it off and having those images come back as negatives and scans and possibly prints. So I'm going to keep going with this. I think there's something here to this, and the feedback that I got from photographers here in Chicago was fantastic and really continued to inspire me to mine how we can do film photography in the digital age. And that's really what the analog story is about, film photography in the digital age. How we can do this hybrid where we take advantage of what film has to offer, but still also take advantage of the technology that's available today that wasn't available when I was shooting film in the 1980s. Finally, the last takeaway here. Midwest photographers. Oh my gosh, of all the great things that happened this week, meeting dozens of members of our virtual camera club who work and shoot in Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, and all throughout the heartland of our country was the biggest thrill of all. I could just go on and on about this, but those of you that I talked to here in Chicago, who came up and introduced yourself and said, I've been listening to the digital story for a year, 2 years, 4 years, whatever, and that I just want to tell you that I really enjoy the work that you do. And then we'll have a little photography chat after that. Those of you that did that, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed meeting you and learning about your photography and what you liked about the show and your ideas for, you know, what I could do in the future, and all that kind of stuff. That was thrilling to me. Nothing warms a podcaster's heart more than someone who is engaged with the show and then takes the time to let, in this case me, know what they think of the show and their ideas around it. And people that do that, I just really think highly of. And so I appreciate that. I loved hanging out with all of you here in the Midwest, and I have to tell you, all of you made a big impression on me. Thank you so much. That is an overview for those of you that couldn't make it to out of Chicago. That was an overview of my experience here. And then, of course, there were many, many other experiences, all the other speakers, all the other stuff. And I'll tell you right now, if you're within reach of Chicago, when this thing rolls around again next year, hopefully I'll be there. Maybe it's a conference that you want to think about. It's not too big, it's not too small, it's not too expensive, and it is the most shooting photography conference that you'll probably ever go to. You will be out shooting all the time, and the vibe is fantastic. Can't wait for next year's event. In the news. This is an interesting little piece that I saw. It's from Petapixel, and it's the warm to cold fader, puts color temperature control onto a filter. And I'm just going to read you what they say here. I have the link in the show notes. If you like to physically control as many of the settings on your camera as possible, the Ice Lava warm to cold fader is right up your alley. This neat little lens accessory puts color temperature control onto a variable filter that you simply twist to adjust. Color temperature isn't something that we think about much these days, given how easily it's adjusted in post. But having a physical filter that lets you warm up or cool down your image gradually could definitely come in handy. And I think so too. And I'm thinking, you know, both for digital and analog work, how cool this could be. Now, it does have some density, so it can also serve as a light neutral density filter. Now, the catch is that it's only available in Taiwan right now. We're hoping that a distributor will pick it up for the States, but you can order it from Taiwan. I'll go ahead and put the Petapixel link in the show notes so you can check it out. This is something that I'm going to investigate more because I do shoot RAW, but I also shoot RAW plus JPEG, and a lot of my JPEGs go straight from camera up to Instagram or somewhere else. And I want to be able to control the color at capture. I don't wait until RAW post-processing to make sure the color's right. I'm trying to get it right to begin with. And I think this tool will make it a little bit easier. And then I'm thinking about, you know, in terms of my film photography, boy, this could be a real blessing to adjust color for film because you don't have a white balance adjustment on your film camera. So I'm pretty excited about this. It's the warm to cold fader, and it's by the folks at Ice Lava, and I'll put the link in the show notes. I want to talk a little bit about Hedge for a moment. Talked about Hedge a couple weeks ago, and remember, Hedge is the fastest app for importing and backing up media on Mac OS. And you know, it allows you to import multiple sources onto multiple hard drives or whatever cloud, whatever you want to do, all simultaneously. And then everything that you copy using Hedge, this file copy program that's on steroids, everything that you copy with Hedge is cross-verified with the original. So I got an email from them the other day, and it wasn't an email, you know, from like, hey, Derek, for the show or anything, because I subscribe to their email list now because I'm really interested in this product. It was just the one that everyone else gets. So if you subscribe to the Hedge email newsletter, you saw this too. And I think it's really neat, and I wanted to share it with the rest of you. So they're saying, we have some great news to share today. Next to releasing Hedge 1.3.2 with some small improvements and fixes, we also have a bigger thing coming, transfer logs. Now this is in beta right now, transfer logs beta. We've been working hard the last few weeks to add a new feature to Hedge beta, which is something that you can download, but it will be in the regular copy pretty soon. So this is sort of a heads up. The much requested log files. Now it's also possible to see which files were copied, when they were copied, and what the source and destination hashes are. So they're saying that if you want to try this out right now, you can give Hedge 1.4 beta a go, and you can let them know what you think, and you know they'll fold that into the final release. But the coolest thing about this is that, you know, not only does Hedge do everything that we're already pretty excited about, which is really provide a very fast way to move images from our camera media cards to wherever they need to go. And then we can worry about Lightroom import later and, you know, all that keywording, all that stuff. Right now, we just want to move them off the card so they're protected. Not only does it do all of that, like it's always done, now we're going to have log files available to us. And it's a feature that you can turn on or off when it's released in the full version. And right now in the beta version, it's a feature that you can turn on and off and have all the information. So that way you know exactly what has happened with your images, where they are and when it happened. So I think that's really cool. I think this is a great addition. They also have a free test ride. So, you know, there's a free version of Hedge, but it's not the premium version. It's still very good. But now they have a free test ride. And if you want to use Fastlane and the other premium features, they now have a week-long license available for you. So you can use the premium version for a week to really get to know how it works, absolutely free. I'll have the link, obviously, in the show notes to Hedge, But basically, you just do this. It's hedgeformac.com, H-E-D-G-E, formac.com, all one word, hedgeformac.com/TDS. And if you do that and you do like the pro version, you can save 20% on it. It just keeps getting better and better. So anyway, I'm really excited to be working with these guys, and I love this new feature, Log Files. Hedge for Mac, they really got it going on. All right, just a couple more little things here. I have this note. Let me take you to it. This is from the Fablographer. Fujifilm, you know, their little Instax printer, the little instant printer that you can carry around in your pocket, so you can transfer files via Wi-Fi from your digital camera to this printer, and it's INSTAX, Instax printer. The new version, the Share SP2, lets you add filters and collages to these prints. So this is really neat. And this is what Fablographer says about it. When Fujifilm launched their Instax printer a while back, we honestly couldn't imagine a way that it could be improved or reworked. But Fujifilm has proven us wrong with their announcement of the Share SP2 printer. The company claims it has improved Wi-Fi connectivity, quieter operation with a print appearing in 10 seconds as opposed to 16, and an improved app to work in conjunction with it. But that's not all. They're also offering the new printer in a silver and gold option. Beyond this, much of the new functionality comes with the new app itself. So now you can apply filters and templates to your photos, and you'll have control of brightness, contrast, and saturation of each photo. So with the app, you can make these adjustments or use these templates and then print. You send print on the app, and the image is sent to the printer via Wi-Fi that you're carrying around in your pocket. I mean, really, deck of cards kind of stuff here. And then a print pops out 10 seconds later. This is really kind of neat stuff. The resolution of the images are 800 by 600 at 320 DPI. It's going to be available in mid-July for $199 in the U.S. And then the mini instant print film is sold separately for $20 for a double pack with 20 exposures. So basically it costs you $1 a pop plus the price of the printer. I've always been tempted by this, but now I'm thinking I'm really tempted by this because I love these changes that they made. And I would like having one of these little printers with me. Obviously I'm going to use my big printer at home, but when I'm on the road and you do a shot of somebody, and they say, you know, I'd like to have a print of that. And instead of doing the whole email thing and all that, you could literally just pull this out of your camera bag because it doesn't take up any space, produce a print for them on the spot, and make their day. I mean, that's really cool. That's really cool. So I'm going to look seriously at this. It's going to be out next month. And you know what? I might be one of the guys standing in line for it. Well, not, you know, virtually standing in line. Standing in line at B&H, right? Okay, let's see. Do we have anything else here? I just want to remind you about my new Lynda title for mobile Flickr. You know, this is pretty exciting. It's called Flickr Mobile, Sharing Photos Anywhere. And I talk about using Flickr on both Android and iOS devices. Flickr is one of those things when I say, hey, you know, if you had a certain experience 5 years ago, and you haven't revisited, a lot has changed. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, Flickr can automatically back up all of your images. You don't even have to think about it. You got 1 terabyte of free storage, and you've got a mobile app that really kicks. So if you haven't visited Flickr in a while, check out this title. This is pretty exciting stuff. I was really pleased with how this title turned out. And then I want to mention to you, did that tutorial in the print class on how to make fine art cards with photos for OS X. Guess where that came from? That came from my Apple Photos book for photographers, published by Rocky Nook. It's available in ebook form right now. And for you, you can save $5 off the price. You can get it for $15 by using the checkout coupon APPLE15, APPLE15, the numbers 15, 15, all one word. Use that at checkout and you can get it for $15. It's full of stuff like what I demonstrated here in Chicago. And finally, I got to give a big thanks and shout out to Red River Paper. They rocked it. they came to me and asked me to speak here in Chicago. They wanted me to talk about printing to help get people excited about it. And, you know, they really paved the way for me to do this. And this is case in point about the type of people that they want to talk to, the message that they want to get out, and how they're willing to really work with the photography community. Yes, they sell paper, but they are as passionate about photography as any of us. I really want you to support them because, in addition to all the good things they do, their paper rocks. And they have a tile on all the pages of the digital store. It'll take you to our landing page there. You usually get some sort of deal. And then they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And they like to give away paper there and keep you up to date on what's happening in the world of printing. So there you go. There is your Chicago takeout with the trains rolling in the background. There's one right now. I hope you enjoyed this show from the field. I'm going to go grab a plane. I'm going to edit the show while I'm flying back to California, and then I'll get it published tonight. So if you're listening to this, it should be right on schedule. Come back next week. I got more stuff I'm working on. So happy to share this time with you, and really enjoyed talking with those of you that came up to me in Chicago. What a great week. Bye-bye now.